Again, I'm going to start over so we can record. Welcome again to CMI training today. My name is Jasmine Smith. I'm filling in for Pastor Riddick. Of course, I'm not him. But I want to tell you guys a little bit about myself just so I'm out of the stranger category. I'm a recent graduate from Southern Wesleyan University. I now work at CBN, the 700 Club, in their prayer center. And I am a member of Pastor Riddick's church here at First Baptist. So I guess that's a little bit about myself. And we'll go ahead and I'll tell you what will be happening today on the call. You'll be having a speaker. His name is Adai Walker, and he is a certified personality trainer. And so you can really look forward to that, as well as a review of the laws from last week, laws 4, 5, and 6. And later on, you'll be receiving a complimentary recording from John Maxwell on how to navigate your dreams. And as we go throughout the call, if you have any questions, just feel free to write them down, or if next week you can ask those to Pastor or to email it to us at cmilcoaching@gmail.com, or you can even post it on our Facebook page. So, you all have any questions before we get started? Any questions? Well, if not, Mr. Adai Walker, are you on?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, again, Mr. Adai, I'm pretty sure he can give you more information about himself, but he's the co-founder of Crown Ministries along with Pastor Riddick. I believe, were you on JM Youth Campus as well?
Yes, I was.
Okay, well, take it away.
Well, good evening, everyone. Hopefully everyone is doing very well. And like you all, I've been enjoying the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. So I just want to share briefly about personality assessments, and so we can, you know, get back to the review and get back to learning that. I just wanted to show a little bit about sort of what I've been certified in, which is being a personality assessor, and we basically use personality assessments for, and you may have used them for your job, or you may have used them in other arenas, but basically I want to share two main reasons why they're sort of vital to use, sort of in the way that we would like to use them in this particular setting. Number one, it really helps people identify what their motivations and their drives and their passions are. It helps people understand, first of all, you know, their values. It helps them kind of understand what motivates them, what encourages them. And it also, because of that, helps people find out how they fit with other people. Let me give you an example. For example, usually we identify the types of people into categories. Either people are outgoing or people are reserved. They're on the opposite end of the spectrum. Then there are also task-oriented people, people that like to get things done, versus people-oriented people. These are the types of people that like to cooperate with other people. And so as someone that understands personality assessment, you can kind of understand, are you driven to connect with other people, or are you driven just to get the job done? Are you driven to be outgoing and extroverted, or are you driven to be intrapersonal in terms of your skills? And so the further you delve into personality, and it kind of can get complex whether you're doing Myers-Briggs temperament, Jungian, or another one that I primarily do is the DISC analysis, where you kind of break everyone down into categories, and usually you see yourself either as dominant, that's the D, influencing, that's the I, steady or sincere, as the S, and compliant or cautious or contemplative as the C. And so the first reason that we use this sort of in review, or we use personality assessment, is to help people see sort of their value. I mean, if you're doing this in ministry or you're doing this in business, you kind of see your value to the team or your value to the organization. It also helps you to figure out what you're motivated by, what would challenge you. It helps you figure out what your possible weaknesses are. And Pastor Riddick has talked about this earlier on the call a couple of weeks ago and last week, that if you're only connecting with people that are just like you, that's showing sort of a lack in leadership and in your strength, but you need to learn how to connect and align with people that are different from you, and that would actually grow you and enhance you. And then also, personality will help you discover what your possible weaknesses are or your ideal work environment. Sometimes the environment that's ideal for us is not the one we work in, so we need personality assessment to figure out how can we cope and how can we deal with the people that are not ideal for us to work with. So that's the first thing in review. We use personality assessment to help us discover our passions, our callings, and our motivation. Second and lastly, if I just am brief about this, we would kind of use personality assessment in coaching or in leading, influencing other people, for us to first find out what type of person or leader or influencer we are so that we can better connect with others. Let me give you an example. If you are what we would call a sanguine coach or a sanguine leader, that word basically means that you're very creative, you're very spontaneous, you're original, and you're clever. Most likely you connect with other people that have that same quality. Now, if you are called or find yourself in a situation where people that are not like that, you don't want to get yourself in a position where you resent that or you sort of find a conflict with them, but you want to learn how through personality assessment to connect with folks that are not like you. Also, say, for instance, you are a melancholy person. You are a person that's very organized. You're detail-oriented. You complete assignments, and you find someone that either you're under or that's over top of you in a supervisory role that isn't like that. How do you figure out a way to connect with someone that doesn't care about deadlines when that's all you care about? Personality assessment will help you figure out a way to align in that way. Let me give one last example. Say, for instance, you are very choleric. You're the type of person that's very goal-oriented, very productive, determined, logical. You think in a linear or analytical way. And other people around you are very spontaneous or they're very emotionally driven. You have to figure out a way to value how God created you, but then also be able to work with them. So in closing, that's sort of the second way that personality assessment works. It helps you figure out what type of leader or influencer you are or follower you are and helps you connect with other people that you're called to lead or called to follow under. So basically, those are the two reasons that help you discover your motivations, your passions, your drive, and it also helps you figure out your areas where you lead with proficiency or excellency and how you can follow other people. So if there are any questions about that, that's sort of it in a nutshell, and she's already given you the parameters of how you, you know, ask questions. So thank you all for your time and listening about personality assessment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wall. That was really, really great advice. Some of the really key things that I found to be really helpful was that finding your personality helps you in leading as well as following, and that's really, really important. And I'm sure Pastor emphasizes this on calls as well, the importance of a leader being able to follow as well. And I think it's great that the assessment helps you to connect those dots to how can I submit to authority at this point, being that I'm a leader. So that's a really great point as well. And another thing that I wrote down was it helps you to know your value. And in being a leader, no matter if you lead in group or just one person, knowing who you are is imperative in order to lead another group of people. If you're leading a group of people and people can, you know, pick out that you're very, let's say, not secure in an area about yourself, then they'll attack that in a way. So it's really, really good to know your value and to stand on that. And it's, again, important to know your worth in order for you to lead other people. Thank you, Mr. Walker. Does anyone have any questions for him? I'll take that as a no. And as a reminder, on July 13th, there will be a personality assessment seminar here in Franklin, and you can get more information about that on the website, and we also will be posting about it soon on Facebook. So if you haven't liked the Facebook page yet or subscribed to it, then you can feel free to do that. So we'll be getting into the reviews of last week's Law 4 on navigation.
Law number four is the law of navigation, which just simply says anyone can steer a ship, but it takes a leader to chart a course. I can remember a couple of years ago sailing with my friend Bill Hybels and going for 3 days out on a sailing boat. And, of course, he is a terrific sailor, and I've never sailed. And we had a crew with us. And every day he'd ask me to kind of take the wheel, and he'd stand beside me, and he'd kind of just teach me a few things about sailing. Now, I was steering the ship maybe for 30 minutes, but I wasn't charting the course. We weren't successful because I was behind the wheel. There were other people who really understood sailing, who understood the details, the intricacies, who were process-oriented, understanding the steps that it took to get from point A to point B. You see, when we think of leadership and we think of the law of navigation, there are some of us that we're kind of like big picture people. We're good behind the wheel. We can see the destination way out there, but we really don't understand the process that it takes day by day, step by step, to get where we want to go. In fact, I find it necessary to have people around me to help me in this whole coaching process, in this leading process, to do the step by steps. In fact, let me make a confession to you. I wrote the book, The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, and The Law of Navigation I'm very weak in. And I want you to know that as we study the laws together and as you learn and apply the laws in your own life, there are going to be some that you really do well. In fact, the ones you do well, you're going to say, hey, John, those are the real laws of leadership, you know. And the ones you don't do well, you'll say, I'm not sure that's even a law. But there are going to be some that you do well. There are going to be some you don't do well. That's okay. That's no problem. In fact, one of the, I think, reasons why it's important to develop a team around you, and I'll talk about that in another law, the law of the inner circle, is because we need people to complement us and to complete us and to do for us what we cannot do. I don't think that a leader does every facet of leadership great. I think we all have our strengths and our weaknesses, even in the area of leadership. But the great leaders, they're kind of like a quarterback in a football team. They don't have to run the ball every time, but they get paid to know who to get the ball to that will ensure the greatest potential gain on that given play. And I think the law of navigation is all about the fact that there are people that we bring around us that can help us in the process day by day, just like we're trying to add value to you. That's one of the reasons you joined the team. We're trying to help you day by day, step by step, develop the coach to be the speaker that you really want to become within your life. Now, the law of navigation is all about step-by-step process. It's all about planning ahead. It's about doing the right thing today so that you can get to the right destination tomorrow. You see, I have discovered that the best leaders not only lead well, but they manage well. Now, I think that there's always a leaning that we have either to the management side or to the leadership side. And so I know some very good managers who lead fairly well and some very good leaders who manage quite well. We don't do them both with strengths, but both of them are essential. And the law of navigation is the closest to what I call management leadership of any of the laws. And it just basically says that if you don't take care of today correctly, if you don't manage the day-to-day details of life, you'll never be successful in the long run. Navigation is a very important law, and I want you to begin to understand that if you don't do it well like me, this may be a deficiency in your life. It's okay. It's okay. The question is not, do you do every law with excellence? Of course you don't. I don't. There are probably 5 of the 21 laws that I'm average in, or even maybe below average. But those that I don't do well in, what I am sure to do is bring people around me who do those laws very well. In other words, they're better than I am. And what do? I do what the quarterback on a football team does. I hand the ball off to them and let them run with the ball. I become their cheerleader, because I know that they're going to take me further than I could take myself. The law of navigation is almost all about working together to make sure that you get to the desired results together. It's a great law. It's a one that we need to develop in our own lives, but appreciate those around us that can perhaps do things for us that we cannot do for ourselves.
So if you can't carry the ball, if you don't have the stamina to run it, then toss it to someone that can run it and get it done successfully. This isn't quite what he said, but that's kind of what I take from it. And I think the cool thing about this recording is that he stated that he's weak at navigation. John Maxwell, as we all know, is one of the most prominent leaders of the world, and he can admit to people that he's weak at the law of navigation. And to me, that is a great leader, a leader that is willing to share their weaknesses, and it basically opens the room up, as he said, that will allow people that are stronger in those areas to support you to, you know, get the job done. So that's a great thing. Another cool thing that I thought he pointed out was that doing the right thing today gets you to the best place tomorrow, and good leaders manage well. So we're going to move on to Law 5, addition.
Law number 5 is the law of addition, which basically says that leaders add value to others by serving others. Now, when you think of leadership and you think of serving others, you don't think of that being the role of a leader. It's kind of like leaders are served and followers serve. And we almost put serving others in the category of, well, if you're serving others, you certainly would be a follower. And if you're leading others, then you would be served by others. And we get very positional in our leadership thinking and hierarchical in our thinking until we say leaders are up here and they're served and followers are down here and they're serving. Nothing, nothing, nothing could be further from this leadership truth. Leadership is truly serving other people. It's adding value to others. And the best leaders I know have a heart and an attitude and actions to serve other people. I know that for a fact because I have had the privilege of knowing leaders, being with leaders, and observing leaders. And I have found that it begins with their attitude. That they understand that if they want to add and multiply influence, the best way to do that is by serving one another. And they have an attitude and a spirit of which to serve. I've had the privilege of owning several companies, and in the time when I owned most of my companies, I lived in Atlanta, Georgia, and I would have people every once in a while that would know me, and they would come up to me maybe in a restaurant, and they would say hi, and they would introduce themselves, and they say, I want to thank you because I just was hired by one of your companies, and I work for you. And whenever they would say that they would work for me, I would always call a timeout, and I'd smile, and I'd say, now, let me explain something to you. You don't work for me. I don't have anybody work for me. Now, you work with me. And guess what? I work with you. In other words, we're going to serve each other. There's going to be a time when you're going to serve me because it's the appropriate time, and I need support, and I need help. And then there's going to be a time when I serve you, because I want to add value to you. With all the leaders of my organization, one of the questions I always want to ask them whenever we're in conversation is, how can I serve you? What can I do for you? How can I add value to you? I have a wonderful friend, Mark Cole, who basically leads a lot of my organizations, and he's kind of my go-to guy and the person that I depend upon to get the work done, to get the job done, to carry the ball successfully. But he's the one that I want to talk to about how are we progressing in these different areas. I look at Mark, and every day I ask myself a question, how can I best serve him? Now, if you know Mark, you know that there isn't a better servant than anywhere. I mean, I watch him. He travels with me around the world. He always looks for, I mean, literally aggressively looks for ways to serve me and to, you know, carry my briefcase or run interference for me or do anything. I've never seen the person more ready and willing to serve, and he does such a great job doing that. But you see, I want to serve him too. Now, how do I, as an owner of companies or a leader, how do I serve him? Well, I serve him by making sure that the questions he needs answered, that I answer him as quickly as I can and appropriately as I can, that he can come to me at any time, that I have an open door policy, that he's never interfering. I try to do that with all of my inner circle, with all my team members. You see, I have learned that people serve others when they not only have an attitude to help and add value to them, but when their life is not filled with importance, self-importance, and ego. I don't know if there's anything worse to run into than a person in a leadership position who thinks they're God's gift to the world. Don't you just hate to see them coming down the hallway? Or a person that has a leadership position and they're insecure and they somehow feel that they have to be positional in nature and they have to constantly be sure that they are powering up over somebody or their entitlement is greater than others and they're always keeping score. Don't do that. The coaches that we're trying to develop in this organization, the leaders that we're trying to develop, the speakers we're trying to develop, listen to me carefully, hear my heart. Greatness begins with serving others, not by being served. Adding value to others. Ask yourself this question. Are you every day, no matter what your position, no matter what your title, are you every day serving other people, helping other people, lifting other people, adding value to other people, caring for other people? You see, when I see a leader, I want to go straight to his or her heart. I want to see what's inside of them, because what is inside of you and what is inside of me are motives, our character. Those are the things that in the long run are going to determine our success as a leader. And this company, this organization, is all about servant leadership. It's all about coaches that serve the people and their clients. It's all about speakers who serve their audience and constantly try to answer questions that the people are asking. It's all about leaders who don't feel that they need to be served, but feel that they are here for one reason, and that is to lift people and make it better for the people that are going to be on their team. So that's what we want. We want to develop you as a servant leader, servant coach, servant speaker. And the law of addition is all about caring, sharing, and lifting others. Putting others first. That's what leaders do. They make things better for others. And because of that, others benefit, others grow, and others develop. That's what leadership is all about.
Great. Again, leadership adds value to others by serving, which is basically what Mr. Maxwell said about the law of addition. And you are already a leader, so you do not have to get so personal with your position title. Everyone knows that you lead, and you should, you know, lead by that example of a daily life and interaction with being intentional on adding to other people or simply lifting them up or falling to their needs at times. And Mr. Maxwell also said that the best leaders have a heart, attitude, and action for serving one another. And I believe that it's okay to be a leader and add value to another leader. And to me, that forms a like power couple or a power connection in a way. And I think of us and our partnership or relationship with Jesus, where we're already leaders in our own right, but he's also the leader of us, so we submit to his authority. And it's like the cliche, he takes our natural as his super, and then it's like this big bang of awesomeness happening. And so one other thing I want to point out was a quote that Mr. Maxwell said. He said, "Greatness begins with serving others, not by being served." As well as how you serve others determines your success. So it's great to be a great leader, but it's also even better to be a great server and add to others. So we're going to get into the last review of Law 6, Solid Ground.
Law number 6 is the law of the solid ground, which basically says trust is the foundation of leadership. In other words, you and I build our leadership on the foundation of trust. If we do not have trust as our foundation, our leadership, no matter how charismatic we are, no matter how smart we are, no matter how gifted we are, our leadership will come crumbling down. We've seen that, haven't we? look across America and around the country and the nation and internationally over the last several years, and we see companies that have had leaders who have violated trust, who have not been men or women of character. And we've seen their companies literally come crashing down. I can still remember several years ago being in New York City, and it was right after several of the companies were just falling right in front of the faces of the people in America because of their lack of character and integrity and the lack of business ethics. And I remember a conversation with my publisher who basically looked at me and said, John, I want you to write a book on business ethics. And I smiled, and I called him my name, and I said, Larry, I said, I can't do that. He said, well, why not? I said, because there's no such thing as business ethics. He said, oh, of course there is. And he began to name all the companies that were having real ethical issues with clients and people and just literally, again, eroding and decaying and falling down. And he said, there are a lot of companies that lack business ethics, a lot of people that lack business ethics. I said, no, there's no such thing as business ethics. And he pressed me again. He said, what do you mean by that? I said, well, there's just ethics. You either have them or you don't. Now, the good news is if you have ethics, it works in business. Oh, happy day. It also works in your family. It also works in your community. It just works because you're an ethical person filled with character. And if you lack ethics in one area, you're going to lack ethics in another area. You can't compartmentalize ethics. I was interviewed not too long ago by the Chicago Tribune and the Wall Street Journal, and basically the interview went something like, can you teach ethics to people? Can you in your business have ethics classes and people enroll in an ethics curriculum, and can you teach it? And my answer was, yes, you can teach ethics. Absolutely you can. But it does no good to have a class on ethics and teach ethics or give out workbooks or books on ethics if the leaders aren't ethical. People do what people see. It takes more than lip service. It takes more than teaching. It takes a life that is filled with character, a life that is filled with integrity. And here's what I know. When we have that character and that trust with our people, then we can make changes as a leader, and we can take them to new heights as a leader. And they will allow us to do things because they trust us. But when trust is gone, immediately the followers will pull back. They'll hold. They won't go forward. They won't be ready to respond. Why? Because there is a gap. The trust gap now has widened, and trust has been violated. And people won't follow leaders that they can't trust. So it's wonderful to have competence. It's wonderful to have leadership savvy. But without character, without trust, without respect, it's impossible to, over the long run, be a successful leader. I say it this way sometimes. Charisma will get you in the door. Character keeps you inside the room. As leaders, we've got to be more than just quick answers and flashes of brilliance. When it's all settled at the end of the day, the decisions we make are based upon the motives that we have, and it really is an inside job. And again, we're talking about developing leaders from the inside out. The law of solid ground just basically says this: the leaders that you want to follow, they're bigger on the inside, their character, than they are on the outside. Oh, they're good. They're competent. They know how to lead. But more importantly, they lead from right motives. They lead for the right reasons. They lead to add value to the people, to make it better for the people that follow them. That's the law of solid ground. Once you've established that trust as your foundation, then you can raise your leadership to great heights. I know that. It takes years to accomplish it, but once you do, you will be a leader that others want to follow.
Great. So again, ethics, either you have it or you do not. And basically people do what they see you do, as Mr. Maxwell stated. For example, if people see your greatness, as you're leading, they'll attempt your greatness as well. And if people see the opposite, if they see your compromise on integrity or ethics at your own company, then more than likely they'll compromise as well. And this also causes people not to trust you. Mr. Maxwell stated that people will not follow leaders that they can't trust, which is also like, you know, common sense. But it's a really, really important fact to remember as you're leading other people. And again, if you have any questions, feel free to write those down or post those on the Facebook wall. And I'm sure Ms. Pastor Riddick will answer those for you on next week. And we're going to get into the final recording. It is a complimentary recording, I'm sorry, from Mr. John Maxwell on how to navigate your dreams. So we're going to get into that.
Number five, the pathway question. Do I have a strategy to reach my dream? There is no magic power in having a dream. You can't just wait for it. You have to work for it. Okay. Here's where many people fail. Many people fail thinking the dream is enough to get them there. That if they just have a dream that they are passionate about and that they love and that's who they are, they just think that that somehow is going to carry them there. And I'm here to tell you that you've got to have a strategy to get to where you want to go. So we're going to look at some research that I came across recently that I have for you. A friend recently acquainted me with the results of a 2005 study published by ThinkTQ, a training and publishing organization. It illustrated how infrequently people develop strategies for achieving their dream. Here's what the study revealed about the people tested. 26% focus on specific tangible targets for what they want in life. 19% set goals aligned with their purpose, mission, and passion. 15% write down all their goals in specific measurable detail. 12% maintain a clearly defined goal for every major interest and life goal. 12% identify related daily, weekly, long-term goals with deadlines. Now, here's the one that grabbed me. Here's the killer, folks. Here is the killer. 7%. 7 out of 100 people take action daily toward the attainment of at least one goal. 7%. And then they wonder why they don't achieve their dreams. Only 7% do something daily that's going to somehow have a positive effect upon what their dreams and what their goals are. So how do you secure your dreams? This question is a lot like the reality question to me. As I said, the reality question, I think of the 10 is the most important because I think that's what people fail the most in achieving their dreams. I think this would probably be number 2 as far as what causes failure in pursuit of dreams. So let's talk about how to secure. I'm going to take the word secure, S-E-C-U-R-E, and I'm going to teach off of that. The letter S stands for state all of your positions. In other words, find out where you are right now. Mark Twain said, the secret of getting ahead is getting started. The secret of getting started is breaking your complete overwhelming task into small manageable tasks and then starting on the first one. So when I want to create a pathway to achieve a dream, I start by stating my positions in the process. Number one, what is my present position? Where am I right now? Because everyone who got to where they are had to begin with where they were. What's my present position? Number two, what's my future position? What will my dream look like when I've achieved it? Number three, what are the positions in between? Now, it's the positions in between that make the dream complicated. Most of us know where we are. Most of us know where we want to go. But most of us have not sat down and began to develop the step-by-step strategy from how to get where we are to where we're going to go. So you have to find out, first of all, just state what position you're in. You've got to kind of know where you are. The letter E, examine all of your actions. Now that you kind of know where you are, look back and start examining all of your actions. The difference I underlined this first sentence in this paragraph. The difference between a dream and wishful thinking is what you do day to day. George Sheehan observed, there are those of us who are always about to live. We are waiting until things change, until there is more time, until we are less tired, until we get a promotion, until we settle down, until. It always seems as if there is some major event that must occur in our lives before we begin living. If you want to achieve dreams, you cannot allow yourself to be one of those people. How do you avoid it? By doing something that will advance you toward your dream today. So what did I do today? Did anything get me toward my dream? C, consider all of your options. However beautiful the strategy, you should occasionally look at the results. Isn't that good? So you need to consider all of your options. George Patton declared, successful generals make plans to fit circumstances, but do not try to create circumstances to fit plans. Once you figure out a plan for reaching your dream, the immediate steps you think that you need to get there, there's a danger that you will become inflexible and try to stick to your plan no matter what. Sometimes it's wiser to explore other options. When you're having a hard time moving forward, don't be quick to revise your dream. Instead, revise your plan. It's always been my dream to add value to people. But over the years of that dream to add value to people, I've reinvented myself many times. I was a pastor, and then I said, my goodness, if I write, I can add more value to more people there. So I started writing, and then I thought, my goodness, if I develop a company that resources people, then those resources are going to be able to go where I'm not, so we'll get a training organization. And so we did that. And then I said, well, if I found an organization called Equip, I can train leaders internationally. And I've probably gone through, I don't know, 7 revisions. I'm still John Maxwell. Still want to add value to people. But you want to be creative, and how many options do I have to achieve that dream? The letter U, utilize all of your resources. Utilize all the resources you have. Look around and say, okay, if I'm going to be successful with my dream, what resources do I have? What people do I have? What opportunities do I have? What kind of time can I give? That's what I'm talking about. Several years ago now, probably, I don't know, 12 years ago, I'd written several books, and they were starting to do pretty well, but I'd never been on New York Times bestseller list. And I went to my publisher and I said, I want to make the New York Times list. And I remember we sat down for a half a day and we developed a strategy for me to do that. And first of all, you've got to have a good book. So it starts there, okay? I don't want to be too elementary, but, you know, you've got to have a good idea. You got to have a good book. And it was right when I was getting ready to write the 21 Laws. I had been for 2 years inwardly thinking and then writing on my legal pad the laws of leadership. And again, it was started off huge, and I got it down to 21 and that I thought were truly the laws. And so when we got in our strategy room that day, I said, okay, we've got a good idea, and then. Let's get people around us to help us with this good idea, because none of us is as smart as all of us. And then we said, let's set a deadline to make the list, because to make a New York Times bestseller list in a book, it isn't like how many books you sold over a year period of time. It's how many books you sold in about a 3-week period, because bestseller lists are determined monthly. And so to make the bestseller list, you've got to sell X amount of copies in about 3 weeks. So we said, okay, here's the window. We're going to do this in April. We're going to make the bestseller list in April. And so we decided that we would in 5 days do a 15-city tour, and that we would get us a private jet, and we'd start in Tampa, and I started a breakfast meeting in Tampa, and I had a lunch in Atlanta, and I had a noon meeting in Charlotte, and you're getting the picture now. And we just absolutely had crowds everywhere we went. We had breakfast, lunch, and dinners, and I would go in, and I would teach on the 21 laws a little bit, and then we brought these books in by the cases, to get people to buy a, you know, buy a case of book for your team, the whole works. And we started in Tampa, went, just kept going back and forth across the country, ended in San Diego. 15 cities in 5 days. About a week later, I made the list. Made the list the first time, and then momentum began to carry it. And I think for in the business, in on the business bestseller list, I think 21 Laws of Leadership stayed on the list for 3.5 years. But now here's very simple. The strategy. It's not enough to just say I want to have a bestseller. Well, then how do I get a bestseller? It's not enough to say I want to get to the top of my organization. The question is, well, what's your strategy to get there to the top of the organization? The letter R in the word secure, remove all non-essentials. Just simply all I'm saying there is just don't do the things. Just don't do things that are going to keep you from getting your dream. Remember I said the secret of your success is determined by your daily agenda. You got that, don't you? What I do today is either making me or breaking me. Now what I'm saying is it's not only what you do that is in the dream area that's going to help you to get to that dream. It's what you don't do because it's not going to help you. Many years ago, now, by the way, I'm not anti this, so I'm just giving you out of my personal life. Many years ago, I gave up reading fiction. Now, wow. I think fiction's wonderful. I think you learn a lot from fiction. My wife reads probably 2 to 3 books a week. And so she gives me a lot of stuff that she's reading out there. So I'm not anti-reading fiction. It's just very simple. I only have time to read so many books. So I determined that I would read books that were nonfiction that would help me in my life to grow. Now, please don't walk out and say, "Well, now I know how to reach my dream. Give up fiction." No. But I am here to tell you, if you're going to reach your dream, there are some things you're going to have to give up. You've got to give up to go up. And there are some things in your life that you're just going to have to remove all those non-essentials, whatever those things are. And then the letter E, lastly, embrace all your challenges. King Solomon, considered to be the wisest man who ever lived, wrote, "A sensible man watches for problems ahead and prepares to meet them. A simpleton never looks and suffers the consequences." How true that is. Got a question to ask you. Halfway through the questions, how you doing? Are you learning something? Are there some that you can kind of say, "I'm doing really well there"? Huh? How many of you did well on one of them, okay? How many of you did not do well on at least one of them, huh? How many of you just need to quit listening to this lecture because the first 5 are going to overload you for the rest of your life? And it's kind of like, I don't know if I even have time or energy to do the next 5. I've already got my challenge in front of me. Can you not see as we wrap up number 5, can you not see the value this would be, not only for you, but for your team? Oh my goodness. Because you have people in your business that have a dream, but they're not going to achieve it unless you've got some kind of a process like I'm bringing you through to achieve your dream and to achieve also theirs, okay? Thank you very much. Okay, now.
Okay, and again, the pathway to achieving your dream is simply having a strategy to get where you want to go. It's really, really important to have a strategy. Always have a plan. Remember to take action daily. As he stated, a certain percentage of people take action daily. It was a very, very small percent, between 10 and 7%. You should be in that percentage to take action daily towards your dream, and remember to keep the momentum going for yourself. If that means motivating yourself daily or reading up on your specific plan that you have made, remember to do that because it will be a really great asset to you. You never want to become so deterred from your vision, so it's really important to stay connected to that. And also consider all your options, as he stated. Utilize your resources and really, really importantly, remove all non-essentials. Denounce those distractions before they even come, because they will come. And, again, what you do day to day is either making your dream or breaking your dream. I'm pretty sure you want to be making your dreams every single day. And once again, if you have to reach your dreams, you will always have to give something up in order to achieve it. I remember an example that Pastor gave is having your hand raised and you're trying to receive something with your palms closed, and it's impossible for you to receive something that way. So just open up your palms and give something, as well as receiving it again. So that's it for today. I will be posting something soon on the Facebook page as a rundown for today. And remember, again, about your questions, you don't want to not get something answered for yourself. And if you can expect answers from the worksheet, the blank worksheet that you got in your email today, in an email, and an audio teaching, again, from Pastor in an email. Thank you all. I hope I did well. I'll assume everybody says yes. And I hope you all have a blessed week. Thank you.
All right. Good job, Jasmine.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.